Not out by the rocks. No. He looked at me again. Hell no. Then what? There was a pause, a short one, but a pause nonetheless. Well, we were fighting. About? The pause was longer, and this time I looked at him. In Ned's tutu? He froze, and I stood in an attempt to display the fact that I was not behind bars and could walk out of the room at any time. Clarence, up until now, you haven't been completely honest with me, and if you don't start, I'm going to personally hand you over to the FBI. No. I placed my hands in my pockets and leaned my back against the wall beside Chief Long. He stood and walked over to the bars, hanging his thin arms between them. For a sous chef, he must not have been sampling a great deal of his wares. We were arguing about the job and moving. She wanted to go over there at the same time as me, but I wanted to get things ready. I rented an apartment over a bookstore from a guy named Gary. I just wanted the place to be nice. He quickly added, "You can check all this."
"We will." What happened after the argument?
Look, I don't want you to get the wrong idea that it was some huge shitstorm fight. It was just the same argument we've been having for over a year now.
He studied me.
You married?
Widower.
He looked contrite, an appearance I wasn't particularly unacquainted with from people looking at me through bars. I'm sorry, but you know what I mean about living with a woman.
I smiled, just to let him know that the conversation might not be going as poorly as he thought. Martha's been dead about 6 years now, and there are disagreements we're still having. He nodded at me, and his eyes filled with tears again.
We kept arguing, and I drank beer. I don't know, I guess I fell asleep.
You don't know, or you fell asleep?
I fell asleep.
He glanced back and forth between me and the chief.
I know it sounds lame, but that's what happened. I swear to God.
Then what?
I woke up, and they were gone.
Did you look for them?
Yeah, I looked all over the place, but they weren't there. I figured she'd gotten all pissed off and had taken Ado and walked home.
Did you look over the cliff?
He looked genuinely surprised. No, I mean, it never occurred to me.
What did you do then?
I got in the Jeep and started home, thinking I'd pick them up on the way. But I never found them.
Do you have any idea what time it was when you left?
No. Why, is that important?
Maybe.
I paused for a moment, a conversational indication that we were changing gears from him to the wide world.
Clarence, do you have any idea who might have some kind of grudge against you or your family?
The thought hadn't dawned on him. You think somebody did this to her?
It's possible, and it's up to us to investigate all the possibilities. Now, can you think of anyone?
Against me, yeah. He stared at the speckled white tiles on the floor. But Audrey and Ado, no.
No enemies she might have had? Family members, people she worked with?
No, her parents are dead, and the only family is a sister of hers in Billings.
What about where she worked? Any difficulties there?
No, I mean, not that I know of.
Where did she work?
The chief's voice rose from behind me. Human services over in the tribal building.
No arguments with anybody lately?
Only me. I checked my Colt, worked the slide mechanism, reinserted the round into the clip, and slapped it back in the stag-handled grips that Katie had given me one Christmas.
Does this mean that I'm no longer a suspect?
I carefully placed it in the pancake holster at my back. Chief Long shrugged. You're low on the list. We stood there in the hallway of the Native Health Services building while Chief Long's mother accompanied Clarence last ball in to see his son. So do I charge him?
That's up to you. Do you think he's a flight risk?
No.
Do you think he did it?
No.
I shrugged.
Neither do I. But there might be a problem with his story. What's that?
Henry and I were at the base of that cliff when Audrey fell. So if Clarence was up there, why didn't he hear me yelling at him, and why didn't we hear his Jeep start up and drive off? He was drunk. And we didn't get up there until hours later.
Well, maybe. What other explanation is there?
I'm not sure. But it's important to keep inconsistencies in mind.
She nodded and hooked her thumbs in her duty belt.
He started opening up after he found out you were a widower. That was slick.
I rested against the wall and tipped my hat back.
It wasn't slick. It was heartfelt.
Wondering if Lolo Long was a lost cause as a student, I turned my head and looked down the hall.
There's a common humanity in all of us. And if you need something from somebody, you'd better understand that. It makes the job easier.
Clarence might be guilty, and we need to be aware because we are in the suspicion business, but he's also a man who just lost someone who was very close to him.
I pushed off and circled behind the reception desk to a coffee pot and a tray of mismatched mugs. She watched me.
I'm separated, in case you were wondering.
I wasn't.
She fought with herself for a moment, and then pointed to the .45 at my back.
Not to change the subject, but do you mind if I ask why you wear that antique, anyway?
I poured myself a cup. It's what I got used to in the service.
I thought about it.
It's a failing to have a favorite, but there it is. Being overly familiar with a weapon is as much a fault as not knowing it at all. I rapidly listed the 1911's shortcomings. Heavy, hard to aim, slow rate of fire, there's a cult of weapons which blinds you to their weaknesses, but it's what I'm used to. I sipped my coffee and gestured toward her large frame Smith in return. Unless things have changed a great deal, I'm thinking that's not what they had you carrying in Iraq.
No. They gave me a 9mm and I hated it.
And you like that .44?
Yes.
I sipped some more of my coffee. I'll ask you again when you have back problems here in about 10 years. I tried not to sound like Lucian. It makes you stand funny. You're compensating for the weight of that thing.
You're just saying that because I'm a woman.
I shook my head, gesturing at my 6.5-foot frame.
You don't see me carrying one, do you?
She patted the revolver. I like the weight.
No, you don't. Or you wouldn't have to use a two-handed stance every time you pull it.
I can guarantee that there will be times in your law enforcement career when you will have more things to do with that other hand than aim.
I sighed. You're not up against body armor-equipped assailants.
She countered with a little heat in her voice. Drugs, adrenaline, those are all factors.
Maybe, but nowhere near as large a factor as just plain missing. Which is what you're going to do with Dirty Harry there.
I gestured toward the pot with my empty mug, but she shook her head in a full snit, so I only recaffeinated myself.
I'm going to give you a little piece of information that most people don't know. 50% of police shot in the country on an annual basis shoot themselves. I'm not talking about suicide, but about officers who accidentally fire into their offhand while drawing, or into the strong side leg while reholstering. Another 30% are shot by other cops, and 10% after that get shot by people who take their weapons away from them. I lifted the mug to my lips. And that's the uniformed, trained portion. Don't get me started on the common populace. I was coming on strong and figured she'd had about enough, but she only stood there with a hand on her revolver like I might try and take it away. After a while, she crossed her arms and changed the subject again.
I heard you talking about an important piece of information we're in possession of that the FBI doesn't know about.
I continued sipping my coffee.
While Clarence was in custody last night, somebody tried to kill me.
She stepped in close, with a little more urgency in her voice.
What?
You don't know anybody who drives a maroon 70 Chevy half-ton with cherry bomb mufflers, do you?
What happened?
Somebody tried to run me over on 212 as I did the walk of shame to Lonnie's last night.
She thought about it. Maybe it was just some pissed-off Indian who
saw a cowboy walking along the side of the road. There seemed to be a lot more intention in the act.
You got a plate?
No, there wasn't one. Besides, I was trying to get away before being turned into a hood ornament. She looked up at me, and I repeated, Maroon, 70, Chevy, half-ton, cherry bomb mufflers. I watched as she retreated to the parking lot, her Yukon and the two-way radio, in that order, and then thought about all the people who were probably angry with me right now. There was a phone at the nurse's station, and I figured Chief Long's mother wouldn't mind if I made a few phone calls. I punched in the number for my office and waited.
Absaroka County Sheriff's Office.
Well, as it happens, this is the Absaroka County Sheriff. She fumbled with the receiver, the fancy one with the little neck cradle she used for extenuating circumstances. I probably led the league in extenuating circumstances.
Boy, mister, are you in trouble?
I sighed and whispered my daughter's name so that she might not hear me close to 2,000 miles away.
Katie? Oh, yes, and I wouldn't want to be you about now.
There was a rustling of papers, and she spoke to someone else about getting Size Arbitoria, the Basque percentage of my staff, to do a little paper serving.
I don't have time for you, but your undersheriff is on the other line. Would you like me to patch you through?
Sure. The next voice was full of Philadelphia ease, where good luck with that translated as go fuck yourself.
Have you been abducted by the Indians?
I smiled at Victoria Moretti's tone. Kind of. I'm in the process of giving sheriff lessons.
What?
It's a long story. There's been some drama up here on the res.
There's always drama with you. You're like a traveling troupe.
She sighed.
So are we in the first, second, or third act?
I thought about it. Hard to tell. Henry and I saw a woman fall off a cliff up here, and we're in the process of finding out who might have done it.
Isaac Newton?
She was carrying a child, boy about 6 months. There was no flippant repartee for that. The boy's in the hospital and appears to be all right, but I've got a new chief of tribal police up here who's getting crowded by the bureau. You could almost hear her teeth grind.
How's Omaha?
It's still in Nebraska. Ruby must have finished dispatching and got on the line again.
You know, you've got an entire list of people who are trying to get hold of you, Walter.
I figured.
Lana Baroja called about the cake design. Rosalie Little Thunder from Rapid City called about the dress. The management for Jalan Crossland called and wants to know if there will be electricity at the site of the reception.
I made a sound in the back of my throat. I don't know the answers to any of those questions.
Who does?
How about Katie?
Vic chuckled. I gotta go.
There was a click as Ruby continued.
Katie's called 8 times in the last 2 days. Would you like me to call her for you and patch you in?
I was quick to respond to that. No.
I thought not. She was trying to hold her temper. Walter, we have a growing situation in our hands, and you're not helping.
What about Henry? Have you talked to him? I thought he was the wedding planner.
Her voice became even more forceful. He is organizing the tribal portion of the wedding. The rest is up to you. Speaking of, how is the tribal portion of the preparations going?
I thought about how little progress I'd been making for Katie's wedding. I glanced at the receiver and thought about where I could go and hide when Hazel Long returned and smiled at me.
Ruby, excuse me for a minute.
I held the phone on my shoulder. Hazel, could you loan me a pen and paper? She nodded and placed both on the upper counter between us. Thanks. I noticed that Chief Long had returned from the parking lot and joined Clarence as they stood a little away from each other in the doorway across the hall, Lolo's eyes giving me an exasperated high sign. I continued to hold the phone against myself as if I were attempting to smother it and looked down at what seemed to be the only friendly eyes in the hospital. Hey, Hazel, can I ask you a really big favor? She smiled and I could have kissed her. I've got an angry dispatcher by the name of Ruby on the other end of this line who has an entire list of angry people who want to yell at me. Is there any way I could get you to write that list down? She held out her capable hands, and I deposited my life's problems into them. As I turned around, I almost bumped into Lola, who had walked over with Last Bull.
What's up?
I'm going to take Clarence home and then make a run to Rabbit Town over on the other side of the res, and I think you'd better come along.
I glanced back toward the room they had come from. Is Dog in with Adrian?
Yeah.
She gestured toward her mother, who was still scribbling away. Mom put food and water and even a bed in there, but he hasn't touched any of it. Do you want to look in on the two of them before we go?
I cracked the door open and could see Dog's large head rise up from the other side of the bed. I whispered, "Just because you're on guard doesn't mean you have to go without food and water, you know."
He wagged once and then settled in again as I studied the sleeping child, who seemed to be resting comfortably. The little body was so small, and I thought about what Henry had said one time about the world being hard on little things. Adrian Plainfeather had overcome some pretty spectacular odds so far, and who knew, maybe he'd be all right. I closed the door and crossed back to the group, joining Chief Long as she studied me.
You don't really think that dog understands what you're saying, do you?
Yes, I do.
The automatic doors swooshed aside, and we were suddenly confronted with the Federal Bureau of Investigation, complete with a smiling Cliff Cly and a phalanx of two other federal agents. The AIC straightened the folder under his arm.
How's the kid?
I shrugged, still not talking.
I hate using a rubber hose on infants, but you gotta get results.
He folded his arms. Am I mistaken, or are you not only out of your jurisdiction, but in the wrong state?
You are not mistaken. I'm in Montana because Katie's getting married up here next week, and I'm making arrangements.
He looked genuinely surprised, but with Cly, you never knew.
This the daughter I talked to on the phone at the bar in Absalom?
Yep. He levitated his eyebrows, a look which expressed a loss of options.
Damn! I was hoping to meet her before she got hitched.
I leaned into him, the brim of my hat about 2 inches from his forehead.
I would not let you anywhere near my daughter, even on a bet.
He smiled a becoming smile and stuck a hand out to Last Bull.
Really sorry about your loss, Clarence.
He glanced back at me for a second.
You're in good hands, and I'm sure we'll find who did this.
He then pulled a thick manila envelope from under his arm and held it out to me.
Full ME's report. I thought you might need it.
He watched as I shifted my eyes to Chief Long and pivoted his arm as if he'd meant to hand it to her all along.
There you go, Chief. I would have put it on your desk back at the office, but I didn't want to clutter things up.
After we'd dropped Clarence off, she drove up the hill from Lame Deer on 212 at a regular speed for once.
Do you want to explain to me what just happened?
I was studying the file on my lap. I would say that the federal government just ceded jurisdiction on this case to the tribal police.
Obviously, they don't think he did it.
I guess not. She settled back in the seat and up the air conditioning.
How did you know about Inez Tutu?
Her mother told me.
Who?
Her mother, the waitress at the casino you slapped the dish away from last night.
Oh.
See, if you're nice to people, they tell you things.
We drove along in silence for a while. Is fooling around with 13-year-olds indicative of Clarence's character? She thought about it.
I guess.
I read the white placards on the fence posts that warned passing motorists to not shoot the prairie dogs because the Department of Wildlife and Parks was conducting an experiment.
I knew him before he enlisted. Real ladies' men. They say he was in a mortar shell raid that did some damage to his private parts. I don't know if that's what happened to him over there, but whatever it was, it messed him up. Anyway, he came back, and he and Audrey hit a rough patch, and he meets this kid, Inez, down at the White Buffalo. She placed an elbow on the driver's side door sill and ran her fingers into the thick mane of her hair. I was struck by her monochromatic beauty, the jet-black hair, the jasper-colored eyes, and the sunset-colored skin. So pretty soon they're an item, but Audrey, who's pregnant at the time, mind you,
I guess Clarence wasn't messed up too badly.
Yeah, well, she gets wind of this little tryst and catches Inez at the IGA and about beats the shit out of her.
This Audrey was pretty tough.
Yeah.
The hand disengaged with the hair.
Was.
Maybe we should go talk to Inez, too.
She nodded.
Maybe. Look, I really don't like Clarence, and I've never liked the way he treated Audrey, but I don't think he pushed her and Ada off a cliff.
I continued to watch the scenery pass.
Why did you ask about Audrey's work? I shrugged. Home and the office, those are usually the places of conflict. People spend most of their lives in one place or the other. What kind of position did she have in human services?
Secretary, receptionist, or something. I mean, she was the first face you saw when you came in the door.
Well, along with Herbert, his good horse, and Lorraine Tutu.
She put her finger in her mouth.
Something?
Oh, I was just thinking about the sign they have on the wall beside her desk, about how if you use strong language or raise your voice, you will be physically ejected from the building.
That was interesting. What exactly does human services do that they have to worry enough about abusive behavior to post a sign like that?
They're in charge of the federal support checks, and when the money runs out toward the end of the month, the natives get restless.
So Audrey could have enemies through work.
Indirectly, I suppose.
She passed a slow-moving truck hauling a trailer with about 5 tons of small bale hay.
I mean, it wasn't like she was the one who wrote the checks or anything. She just handed them out.
I nodded and repeated her words back to her. But she was the first face you saw when you came through the door.
She rolled her eyes. All right, when we get through in Rabbit Town, we'll head back to Lame Deer and have a talk with Herbert.
The disc jockey?
The bit he does for KRZZ is a second income. His Honorable Herbert, his good horse, is Audrey's boss. Nothing goes on at Tribal HQ without his knowing about it.
I raised a fist. Stay calm, have courage, she smirked,
and wait for signs.
The trees were all stunted on the highlands of the Cheyenne Reservation. After the Baby Dean fire swept across the ridges and carried 60,000 acres of ponderosa pine with it, the remains were sold at salvage, including the 3 trailer loads of logs Henry Standing Bear brought down to my place that had built my house.
Her voice interrupted my wandering thoughts. What I'm trying to figure out is why he didn't respond when you and the bear yelled.
I found it interesting that she'd just mentioned Henry in such a personal way, but decided not to remark. He says he was drunk, woke up, and they were gone. There are more than a couple of scenarios. Maybe he was passed out and didn't hear us. Another is that they did as he suspected and left.
How do you explain both she and Adrian falling off the cliff, then?
They came back after Clarence drove home, or somebody brought them back.
She shook her head. Did you see any other tracks?
No, but just because they didn't see them doesn't mean they weren't there. She didn't answer. I leaned back in the seat, determined to enjoy the ride. Do you mind telling me who we're going to see?
A fellow by the name of Small Song.
Artie Small Song? She nodded.
Yeah, you know him?
Unfortunately.
He's got the only 71 red GMC registered on the res. Closest thing I could find to your Chevy. She studied me. How do you know him?
She watched as I pulled the Colt from my back, dropping the clip and reinserting it back in the grip.
You're not going to shoot yourself, are you?
I had to smile. If it's the only way out of this chicken shit outfit.
I holstered the Colt. Are we going to the mother's place or the dental hygienist he's been shacking up with? She flicked some jasper shards at me. And might I ask how it is that you are so intimate with Artie Smallsong's personal life?
We liked him for the little bird case.
She concentrated on the road, for which I was thankful. The only address I've got is the mother out on Otter Creek Road. Did you read his file?
I didn't have time. Why? I twisted my wife's engagement ring on my little finger. He's what my undersheriff, Vic, would call a bad motor scooter.
Lolo glanced at my finger. Priors?
I let go of the ring and draped my hand out the window. Boku, and he has a tendency to be well-armed. Really, really well-armed.
She smiled as she accelerated, slapping a hand on her overloaded holster. Maybe you'll be glad I've got this 44 after all.
I looked out at the burnt husks of dead trees like black veins in the crystal blue sky. I doubt it. Chapter 5. I'd been to Artie's mother's house before. It was up one of the Fingerling canyons that ran down to Otter Creek, and it reminded me a little of the departed Geo Stewart's junkyard back in Durant. The rusted vehicles
trailed all the way down to the main road toward the more populated areas of the unincorporated Rabbit Town. I don't know why Rabbit Town is called Rabbit Town, other than there might have been rabbits there at one time. But I hadn't seen any so far today. So far, no 71 GMC, either. The further we went up the hill, the older the cars and trucks got, and we finally parked somewhere around 1939. It was hot, but there was a trickle of smoke whispering from the tiny cabin lodged into the hillside, just like there was when I had visited the winter before last. That time, I'd remained in Henry's truck as he'd asked the old woman about her son, but this time I was there officially. I hoisted myself out of the Yukon and looked at the place, especially the windows, since Artie was known to be in possession of ballistic oddities like FAL-308s, MAC-10s, and even an M-50. I knew because I'd been through his closet, or the dental hygienist's, at least. "Hold up!" Lolo Long, who was already winding her way toward the cabin, looked back and immediately placed a hand on her colossal sidearm. I pointed up. The smoke was actually coming more from the back, so I took the route around the corner of the house toward the hillside. Chief Long followed as I carefully picked my way around a rotting roll of mustard-yellow carpeting and the wire remnant of a bedspring. "Do you know his mother?" Once again, her tone was defensive. "No." I studied the nearest window and could see the rags stuffed around the casing, as much for insulation against the heat as the cold. "Just for the record, I don't expect you to know everybody on the res."
"Thanks."
"Now, do you mind if I do the talking?" She gestured and, "After you, my dear Alphonse," and brought up the rear. There was quite an operation going on out back, where an elderly woman was scooping pre-burned charcoal with a number two shovel and spreading it evenly in a pit lined with heavy stones and tinfoil. Tipped to the side was a rack made from sheep wire and rebar, which held a good-sized doe elk that had been butterflied and then stretched onto the contraption. She froze when she saw me, but then rose up and rested her chin on the back of her gnarled hands, her cataract-impaired eyes staying right with mine. "Mrs. Smallsong?" She didn't answer, but the milky eyes clicked to my right like the buttons on a rattlesnake's tail as she took in Chief Long's uniform. I walked closer and pointed toward the complicated arrangement. "Open pit elk cooking. I haven't seen that in quite a while. My mother used to do it." I extended a hand. "My name is—"
"I know your name, lawman."
She turned her head and shot a prodigious stream of tobacco onto one of the 40-pound rocks where it sizzled. The old woman then glanced past as Long joined me, but then her eyes clicked back to me the way they had before.
"Looking for my son?"
I conceded the fact. "Say, does he still have that 71 GMC? She kept her gaze on me, and I was just as glad the cataracts were there to guard me against what was most certainly the evil eye.
"You want to buy a truck, lawman?"
I smiled. "Never can tell." She took her time before answering and poked at the coals with the wood-handled shovel, its point worn down so that it looked indented.
"Got plenty out front."
"I need one that runs." I looked through the window as if Artie might be inside. "Is he around?"
"No."
I nodded and kneeled down by the rocks to stick a finger into her gallon water jug of marinade, pausing to look up at her. "May I?" She nodded, with a curt jutting of her chin. It tasted pretty wonderful. "Pineapple?"
"Commodity juice. All they had this month."
I ran my tongue around my mouth as I looked at the door, propped open with a kitchen chair, and the windows, which were curtained with all different calicoes. I looked back at the elk's body where I could see where the death shot had pierced one side and then continued on through the other, taking a lot of meat with it. I went ahead talking about the marinade. "Sage, garlic," she interrupted, impatient with my novice tongue.
"Cider vinegar and beer, lots of beer."
I stood and looked down at all 4'10" of her, wrapped in a shawl and dressed in a full-length layered skirt despite the 90-degree weather and the fire. She looked as if she should have been beside a sheep wagon telling fortunes and finding pentagrams in people's hands. Maybe that's why I like it.
She cocked her head, regarding me.
You are the lawman from the Asanta Mountains.
I am.
They say you're a good man, Asanta.
She shifted her weight.
You know I had 3 sons?
No, ma'am.
One was killed in the Vietnam. My 2nd son, the one you hunt, never showed no interest in the white man's army. He's a smart one. My grandson, Nate, the one that works at the Talking Box, the boy of my son up in Deer Lodge.
I smiled. The radio station.
Yes. He was going to fight in this war. They have now. I don't know which one.
She shifted the handle in her hands and rested it beside her face.
I told him no, that he couldn't join the white man's army, that they would only get him killed.
She studied me.
You in the white man's army, Asanta?
I was. She nodded, mostly to herself.
Only the white man survives the white man's army.
I glanced at Lolo. Chief Longhair was in the white man's army.
Sesenovoto and Ma Etao.
I saw Long stiffen. But she said nothing, and it was possible she was learning.
Why you hunt, my boy?
I figured I'd just level with her. Last night he tried to run me over with his truck. She stared at me through